ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Artemis 2 has flown round the moon, and the four astronauts on board are on their way home.
Today, for all humanity, you're pushing beyond that frontier.
We're following every step of the mission in a special daily season of science fiction called Artemis Explained. Stay with us as the mission continues to unfold, with updates from me, Belinda Smith, so you know what just happened and why it matters.
Integrity, over to you.
Search for science fiction on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
A fragile two-week ceasefire deal in the Middle East has raised hopes a surge of ships will be able to get through the key shipping passage, the Strait of Hormuz. For weeks, the ships carrying precious oil and gas needed to fuel global economies have been blocked. Today, Susan Stone, the Credit Union SA Chair of Economics, on whether a ceasefire changes expectations about the economic fallout and what it means for our petrol and diesel prices. I'm Sydney Peat. On Gadigal Land, Sydney, this is ABC News Daily. Susan, there's a fragile ceasefire in Iran. Who knows what happens next and what happens with the Strait of Hormuz, which is critical for global oil and gas supplies. But there's hope, right? The oil price plunged when the ceasefire was announced.
That is true. The oil price is down, I think about 15%. And that is really good news. Obviously, it's still much higher than it was before the war. We see that there is still some uncertainty around the ceasefire, with different sides claiming different understandings of what it means.
Iran is claiming Israel is breaching the truce deal by continuing attacks against Hezbollah in Lebanon. But the US and Israel say that was never part of the agreement.
Israel is reported to have made 100 strikes on Lebanon, on Beirut and Lebanon in 10 minutes. That's massive bombing.
Iranian officials wrote on social media that three key clauses of its 10-point peace proposal agreed to by the United States were violated.
I will reiterate the president's expectation and demand that the Strait of Hormuz is reopened immediately, quickly, and safely.
So there's still a lot of uncertainty, which will be reflected in the price of oil going forward.
And we certainly don't know how much oil could be passing through if there is a ceasefire that holds.
That's correct. There's roughly about 800 vessels that are kind of stuck in the strait. About 500 of those are fuel, either LNG or oil. Right now, there's been an average of about five or six ships getting through a day, which is well below the average of between 60 and 100 ships. They're estimating that with the ceasefire, there might be somewhere between 10 and 15 ships getting through, but we're still talking, like 20% of what a normal capacity would be.
Well, the International Energy Agency said on Monday that at least 40 energy assets across nine countries in the Middle East have been severely or very severely damaged since the Iran war began. Even if the strait is open, that infrastructure is not returning to normal output anytime soon, is it?
No, you're exactly right. It's going to take months, if not years, to rebuild some of that infrastructure. Plus, even the existing facilities and production areas, which weren't damaged so far, they've really powered down because of all the uncertainty. And, they're not going to produce oil and different fuels just to have it sit there. So that all needs to be restarted, and that doesn't happen on a dime either. So they won't really resume full capacity unless they're sure they can put that oil on tankers and those tankers can safely leave the region to their final destinations.
We've been significantly impacted by the war and the closure of the strait here in Australia. The oil supply crunch has led to massive spikes in petrol and diesel prices at the pump. Could a pause in the conflict provide any relief for motorists? And when would that trickle through to us?
The price increases happened pretty quickly. So you would hope that any price decreases that were coming would happen as quickly, but that's probably not going to be the case. You know, many of the companies that provide the petrol will wait and see what happens with the price, because if they anticipate that that lower price for petrol won't be sustained, they may just keep the prices the same. So, you know, it might end up being that we don't see any more price increases, but we also don't see major price decreases for the time being.
Well, the PM is in Singapore for the next couple of days. Now, he wants to shore up our fuel shipments because we import most of our fuel, right? So what will he be negotiating?
That's right. Much of that does come from Singapore. So the PM is going to go and basically remind Singapore that we're a very trusted partner. The good thing is that they buy a lot of LNG gas from Australia. So It is mutually beneficial. LNG is also being tied up in the crisis. So we're in a good bargaining position, if you will, to remind Singapore that we should be maintained as a priority market for them and that they can be assured that they're going to still get, you know, the gas and other materials that they rely on from Australia.
What's your expectation on the security of our fuel supply at this point? Has anything really changed? And is there a chance that we could still run short of fuel supplies and have to ration down the track?
Our fuel supplies are still in good shape. Hopefully this reprieve will allow us to stock up on any use that we've already dipped into our reserves. There will be a question about what the optimal level of reserves are for Australia, and I'm sure that's going to be a big debate going forward.
Well, let's look at how this is affecting the Australian and the global economy. The ceasefire plan proposed by Tehran includes allowing both Iran and Oman to charge fees on ships transiting through the Strait of Hormuz, which before now has always been free to pass through.
That's correct. The Strait itself is considered international waters, which means it's not owned or should not be controlled by any one country. The fact that Iran is now asserting its so-called rights to be in charge of the strait and its ability to charge tolls, as you said, I mean, I've heard that they've already been charging up to $2 million for a vessel to pass through the strait.
What will that mean in the long term for oil prices? Would we ever see fuel prices come down to pre-war levels?
That remains to be seen. I mean, technology always changes. Maybe there might be some technology breakthroughs that would make production cheaper. But all things being equal, if they start to charge tolls, we'll see at least some of that being passed through in terms of higher prices. And given that the demand for oil is very, what we call inelastic, meaning it's not very price sensitive. You need oil. You need it to run your factories. You need it to produce some types of goods. You need it to put in your car. As long as that demand is very strong, they'll be able to pass on the majority of any price increases that they have due to tolls. Mm. So that would imply that petrol prices would remain above pre-war levels.
Okay. And what if oil and energy prices remain high? What's that going to do to the global economy?
In the short term, it's going to make goods and services more expensive. It's going to cost more money to produce them. It's going to cost more money to ship them. It's going to cost more money to go and buy them. It's just going to make things more expensive. But, you know, on the other hand, it becomes more viable for companies to start to think about using alternative energy sources and for companies to invest in R&D to figure out how to make those alternative energy sources more efficient, more available, more dependable. So we saw a big surge in alternative energies after the 1970s oil crisis. There was a lot of money put into it because when one energy source becomes more expensive, it becomes more economical decision to try to invest in alternative sources.
Have we seen the worst of that yet in terms of the price of goods going up?
as a result of the oil shock?
I don't think so, unfortunately. I think that because what we've been seeing immediately are increases in transport costs. We've seen a lot of companies start putting fuel surcharges onto the transport aspect of goods and services. We've seen, obviously, our own payments in terms of consumer spending. They've been shifting away from other types of goods and services because they have to spend more money every week on petrol. But we haven't really experienced what the increased cost in the production of many goods and services. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that it costs money to fuel production facilities for everything we consume from cars to clothing to household goods, that hasn't really been reflected because currently businesses are still selling inventories and goods they've purchased pre-war. Mm. As those inventories begin to dwindle and they need to be replaced, to the extent that the new goods that are being replaced reflect higher production costs, we're going to see higher costs in the price of the goods that we're consuming.
What about here in Australia? The oil shock will push up prices. Would a two-week ceasefire ease pressure on the Reserve Bank to further hike interest rates?
It's 2 weeks, so that doesn't really mean much to producers. They're not going to do major ramp up for 2 weeks because that's just not efficient. It doesn't make sense. It costs them more to ramp up. And that 2 weeks, we're still looking at maybe 20% of the volume pre-war getting through. And that's not going to move the dial on anybody's production costs. You know, we're not even thinking about things like insurance and other costs that are associated with that or the other goods coming through. And the number one thing people have been talking about is fertilizer. So fertilizer cost remains high. And farmers respond to that by either A, costing them more to plant their crops, or B, them cutting back on the amount of crops they plant. That has implications for food prices going forward. So there's still a lot of unknowns in terms of what the cost impact that's going to have, therefore the price impact that's going to have on the Australian economy. And the RBA is going to be watching this closely, because if we start to see these prices increasing and staying high, then they're going to be in the position where they need to address that by, you know, raising rates or trying somehow not to let that inflation embed itself in the economy over the long run.
Because Australia's inflation was already very high before the war started causing problems, wasn't it?
That's correct. Not only was it high, it's above the target rate, but it was increasing the last few months. And that's of concern to the RBA. And that wasn't even being driven by international events. If you look at the amount of inflation coming from what we call tradable goods, those goods that are either imported or exported, those goods that are subject to international prices, that inflation is less than 2%. It was like 1.5% prior to the war. Mm. While domestic or non-traded goods, that inflation was closer to 5%. So up until this recent event, our inflation has been driven by domestic concerns or domestic pressures, such as housing and such as domestic travel. And so it was already feeling pressure from the domestic side. If we now add pressure from the international side, the RBA is really going to be forced into action.
Right. Okay. Well, there's still a lot of uncertainty. The ceasefire may not last long. Do you think the war, though, has changed the outlook for the global economy?
I think so. I keep using the same word over and over again, is uncertainty. There's uncertainty surrounding the cost of a major input to the global economy. Firms are going to respond to that by not acting. They're going to wait. They're not going to make major investments. They're not going to make any expansion in markets. They're going to put on hold any hiring decisions. And all of that means a slowdown in an economic sense. And so there becomes real concern that the global economy slows down. The IMF has already come out saying that it's concerned some economies could lose, you know, 1%, you know, or higher of GDP growth if this conflict continues. And if that also translates to higher prices, then we get into the situation of stagflation, which is a real problem, and it takes tremendous movements to get an economy out of that situation, and it's not always a pleasant occurrence. We need higher interest rates to kind of get the economy kind of shocked out of any kind of stagflation that we may encounter. So if all of this eventuates, it means, you know, another very large slowdown for the global economy and, of course, the Australian economy as well.
Right. So a recession really is still on the cards here in Australia.
It is a possibility for sure.
Dr. Susan Stone is the Credit Union SA Chair of Economics at Adelaide University. Audio production for this episode by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sydney Peed. ABC News Daily will be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.